This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Scott Scheuer, the former CEO of JMP Solutions, a company he ran for 25 years, mechanical engineer, and now a professional sailor. Scott is the skipper and president of Canada Ocean Racing, an international ocean racing team dedicated to providing sailors of all ages with new experiences while promoting inclusion in the sport through charitable and corporate brand partners. Scott, great to have you on Sports Jam.
Thanks, Doug. It's great to be here.
So on May 29th is a big, unique race that's coming up for you. You're going to be competing in the New York Vendée. It's a single-handed, one-person, 3,600-mile route that starts in New York City and finishes in France. Tell us about this event.
Yes, so this race is a race across the Atlantic Ocean. It starts, as you said, at the end of May, and it will be my first solo transatlantic race in this boat, which is quite a racing machine.
So you started to have a feel and a desire to be on the water at the age of 8. So this sailing has really now taken over your life and has become such a passion. Take us back to that 8-year-old and being on a dinghy and why this was something exciting for you.
Yeah, so I live in Ontario, Canada, on Georgian Bay, which is a bay off Lake Huron, one of the Great Lakes. And my parents had a cottage up north, and we would go up for a month every summer. And I had a small dinghy, and I was allowed at the age of 8 to take this dinghy out and go wherever I wanted. So I would go out for the day and tour around all these islands, and it was just, you know, the ultimate in freedom. I mean, you just can't describe it. And so, you know, being on a boat, touring the water is a very happy place for me. You've heard of getting into flow. A lot of athletes, when they're in flow, you know, it's where you want to be. And that's where I am when I'm sailing. It's just fantastic.
When did you know you wanted to be a professional sailor?
I knew I wanted to be a professional sailor about 2 years ago. I've always been into sports and athletics. I done triathlon for a long time. I've done downhill ski racing for a long time, and just always loved sports and athletics. I have a degree in psychology. I'm an engineer, and I've known of this offshore sailing for a long time, but it was in 2020 during COVID where it really hit me that this is what I should be doing.
It's not something that the average person can do, Scott. Just go, I want to be a professional sailor, and now I'm going to compete in a race that is going to be 3,600 miles, and I'm by myself. Some people might think that that's a little crazy, but for you, as you just said, it's a chance for freedom.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and can I tell you a little bit about the story during COVID that really kicked it off for me?
Absolutely.
So I was running my engineering company, and I was looking for some investment to help me take it to the next level. And I'd been on phone calls with private equity groups 12, 14 hours a day for a week. We were in COVID lockdown here in Canada, where you weren't supposed to leave your house. And I live in a town, I have a mountain in the backyard and a lake in the front yard, literally. And I hadn't been outside in weeks. And I saw the start of this around the world race called the Vendée Globe that happens every 4 years. And the skippers were walking down the dock with masks on. They got to their boats, they cast off the masks, and they went out to tackle the world. And here I was strapped to my desk. So I looked at that and thought, man, I'm doing something wrong here. I should be doing that. And that's when I signed a deal with a New York-based private equity group, ended up selling 70% of the company, left the company 6 months later, and since then I've been dedicating all my time to this venture.
You mentioned you've been an avid skier. You've always kept yourself in great shape. You have to be in great shape to be a sailor, right?
You do. It's very physical, especially single-handed sailing. You know, the boat is 60 feet long. The mast is 100 feet high. The sails weigh a couple hundred pounds easily. They get wet, they can weigh more. And you're carrying these around. Everything on the boat is manual. You're not allowed any power systems. So you, even to put the mainsail up, a cruising boat of this size would have electric winches For me, I'm using a hand manual winch that's driven by my arms to get these sails up and down. Very, very physical.
You want to compete in the Vendée Globe in 2028, don't you?
That's correct, yes. So these are training races, let's say, for that big event.
What do you have to work on as a sailor? I'm, you know, obviously you're going to be talking about stuff that I have no clue, but as far as skills that maybe we can relate to, you know, a lot of people like to go out on their boats and they like to maybe go on a sailboat, but they have no idea about competing as a racing captain of a racing team or solo. What are some of the skills that you feel that you need to get to be able to compete in Vendée Globe?
Yeah, it's a very multi-dimensional sport, which is what really attracts me. I mentioned I'm an engineer by trade. It's a big machine, is really what it is, that uses the wind to move itself forward. And so there's a lot of kind of aerodynamics and how it does that, and a lot of mechanics in the boat. The boat has a lot of systems. It has control systems, it has electrical systems, it has water ballast systems. So there's lots of moving parts that have to be, you have to know how to use them, you have to know how to maintain them, and you have to know how to fix them when something happens at sea. You have to keep in good shape because you're moving heavy stuff around. Some of the, you know, getting the sails up and down is requires muscles, but also cardio strength. You know, there's a big psychological part to it as well. Sailing across the Atlantic in something that can sink by yourself, millions of miles away from home, and being by yourself is another part of it. Just how do you deal with being by yourself? And it was interesting because I realized a few weeks ago I did a solo passage that was 7 days long as a pre-qualification route I had to do for this upcoming race. And I realized that I've never actually been away from human contact for 7 days before. Think about that. What's the longest you've ever been away from human contact, from seeing a person in real life? 7 days. I didn't even realize that what that was until I did this. So there's lots of different aspects, ones like that that even pop up that are unexpected. You know, there's the food side of it. What do you eat when you're at sea? You can't keep fresh bread for this. The Vendée Globe's a 3 to 4 month race. So we're eating freeze-dried food and kind of coming up with diets of more snacks and such that keep to make it that long in a boat and stay healthy.
The average person can't stay away from their phone, their cell phone for 2 minutes, no longer human contact, when you think. So what have you learned to think about when you're going to have these long periods of time? Because I would imagine it's a great time for reflection about your life. It's probably a spiritual type of experience for many, but for you, what is it?
It's all of that. I mean, there is a lot of time, but you also are working very hard to keep the boat moving. You're checking weather, you're checking competitor positions. It's a race. So you're not cruising, you're racing. And so I find when I'm racing, it's pretty full on. There isn't a lot of time to think because if I'm awake, I should be doing something. If I'm not doing something, I should be asleep, keeping my energy for if something breaks. On some of the training passage and such, there's a lot of reflection, a lot of thinking, and it does give you time to worry a little bit too. So it's been an interesting, I'll say, psychological journey for me as well. Probably the biggest thing that I've learned is these boats they're built to be as light as they can be. So they're super fast, but to be strong enough to just barely make it around the world. And so you think about an F1 race, every F1 race, something breaks on a car somewhere. These boats are the same. Things are always breaking. That's not a thought you want to have when you're halfway across an ocean, is what happens if the mast falls off? What happens if the keel falls off? And so learning how to manage those intrusive thoughts and realize that, you know, I've done all the training, we've done all the boat prep. If it happens, it happens. I know how to deal with it. But sitting here worrying about it happening is not going to help me at all. So I have to shut that down and move on to something else. That's probably been the biggest learning for me.
Before we talk about that beautiful boat that's pictured behind you here on the video version of Sports Jam, we're speaking with Scott Scheuer as Be Water Positive, his beautiful boat. I want to ask about You could be the best sailor in the world, but if weather does not cooperate or there are changes, that just changes everything. And the Vendée New York will be no different, right?
That's true. Yeah. The good thing is we all have the same tools to get weather data and information to the boat. And these boats are actually fast enough to outrun weather systems, or to run to them, depending on what you want to do. So there's a lot of strategy about understanding the weather, understanding the forecasts, figuring out where the forecasts are going to be accurate, figuring out where they may be wrong, and getting the boat in the spot so that it will go the fastest in the direction you want it to go. That's a huge part of it. And it's always changing. It's super dynamic, very interesting. It's really, really an interesting part of it. Yeah, that's a big part of sailboat racing is putting the boat where it's going to go quickly.
While this may be a solo race, you're all about a message for everyone, too. Your boat is Be Water Positive, a $2 million vessel designed and built for speed. But water positivity is the message, one of the big messages you're trying to talk about that. What is water positivity?
Yeah, so you've probably heard of carbon neutral, being carbon neutral, which is doing things to offset your carbon footprint or not having a carbon footprint. Being water positive is a similar concept around water preservation, water being a precious resource to us all, and one that, quite frankly, we're quite spoiled with how much fresh water we have in our backyard here on the Great Lakes. But, when you're out sailing across the ocean on millions and billions of gallons of water, you realize very quickly that this water is useless to me. I can't drink any of this water. I can't mix this water with my freeze-dried food until it's treated. And so much of the water we have is completely useless until it's made into a usable format, made to be potable water. And so, first of all, it's just raising awareness of the precious nature of the water resource that we have, and let's try to preserve it. But also, in doing that, there are some that can be reducing their water use. There's also water reuse. And it's about finding ways to reduce your usage and reuse water where you can. And ultimately, we can produce more clean water than we're destroying, which would make us water positive as communities, is probably a better way to look at the water positive side of being actually water positive. There are a lot of companies that are pledging to be water positive. So companies like Apple and Microsoft want to be producing more clean water for their communities than they are using, which would be producing more water than they're consuming. So they'd be water positive. So that's what the pledge of being water positive means.
We've heard those warning signs for many years that we're running out of water. So this is so important to us. But to have this environmental message behind what you love shows that, that there's so much more to Scott Scheuer than just wanting to be, out there sailing. You're sailing for not only you, but for a purpose. When it comes to water positivity, when do you see us making a real difference that it may no longer be a problem?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, it's one that I think there are places around the world that are further ahead than others. And, we're just learning this ourselves, as individuals, even. And again, it's been interesting in my travels. I have a gentleman on our team who's Australian, and, they're used to down there. Most of their water comes from having to desalinate it from the ocean, and it's expensive water. So they would put bricks in their toilets as kids, and they would, turn the shower on, get wet, turn it off, lather up, turn it off, rinse off, turn it off. Here, I don't have bricks in my toilet. My wife takes showers that are 20 minutes long. I mean, so, lots of room for opportunity for everyone. And, when will we be really making a difference? I think every little thing we do makes a difference. When will it not be an issue? That's a big question. I don't know. Depends how serious we get about it. The technology's there to create water from ocean water. It's expensive, though. It requires electricity and power to run those treatment plants. And then that comes at another expense, and a lot of times an environmental expense. So There's not really an easy answer, but having everybody aware of just even the reducing and the little reuse you can do. I mean, people in places collect rain with rain buckets. I still don't do that at home, but maybe I should. So.
When we think about frozen water during the Stanley Cup playoffs, we think
Right on.
Canada, right? We always think about Canada and hockey, and we think about curling,
Yeah.
but not everybody thinks about sailing when it comes to Canada, and you're changing that.
Yeah, I mean, sailing, Canada, we have one of the largest coastlines in the world. I think we have one of the largest freshwater resources in the world. Sailing is a sport here. A lot of people enjoy it. It's not nearly what it is in Europe. I just recently spent some time in the UK doing a sailing training course where we went up all the little different estuaries and rivers around the place called the Solent. It is unbelievable how many sailboats there are there. So there's a big difference in how much sailing people do, but yeah, I mean, I'm trying to help the sport of offshore sailing in Canada. It's an expensive sport. There's a pretty high barrier to entry, largely dominated by the Europeans. And I'm trying to get a team going here that has a Canadian flag on it and really a North American flag. There are very few people in North America that have raced at this level of offshore sailing. I'm just trying to kind of, push it forward for us and see if we can keep some momentum going.
Scott, we always want to have somebody to root for when it comes to sport. And so, people that are rooting for Scott Scheuer, how can they follow you during this New York Vendée race that starts on May 29th?
The easiest way to follow us is through our website, which is CanadaOceanRacing.com. We also have Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn handles that have the same CanadaOceanRacing.com. On those platforms, we'll post a tracker for the race, which is put out by the race organizers. You could look up the New York to Vendée sailing race and it would come up. And it will show us, it will show the other boats that we're competing against. It's neat because it overlays the weather systems and you can see the wind. You can say, holy jumping, that's a big storm coming out. I wonder what they're going to do. And you can see the different strategies everybody does over the course of the race. There will no doubt be boats that have to retire somewhere through the race because, again, these boats are made to go quick, which doesn't mean they all make it. So they'll have to retire, and some of them will be out there for a while finding their way back to the nearest shoreline, I'm sure. And that's all in the tracker. There's also a lot of social media that comes off the boats now with Starlink and other systems. We have a lot more communication abilities. So there's some good videos and footage that people can see as well.
People are fascinated in following people going on these long treks, and whether they be a swimmer through the years, they just had the NIAID movie come out on NIAID swimming, and they've had movies about a teenager who was trying to sail and was successful. So people are fascinated. When you have had your journeys, what has been the most horrific time for you in the water?
The most horrific time in the water. I thankfully have not had any big crashes or damage to the boat or anything. I'd say the most horrific time I've had, and I was surprised by this, is that I get seasick in big seas, which is an odd thing for an ocean racer to have to suffer from, but I do. And sailing on the lakes, I didn't know it. I never was seasick on the lakes. But out there, you can get 5, 6, 7 meter, which is, 20, 30 foot seas. And sailing solo, you have to sleep on the boat, you have to make your food, you have to do the navigation. So there's a lot of time at a computer screen, bouncing up and down in the dark, and I get seasick. And I've had some pretty long nights where I don't know if you've ever been seasick, Doug,
Oh
but
yeah. Oh yeah.
it
Well, at least
is.
being on a cruise and turning green,
Yeah.
that'll qualify, right?
Terrible feeling. Get me off this boat now. I don't care what it costs or what it takes. And realizing, you're the skipper, you're the guy that has to deal with it. You can't curl up in a ball and go to sleep and cry. You have to sail this boat. Thankfully, I found it only ever lasts a few days, and after that, I get my sea legs. But there have been a few times where heading out the first few days have been pretty rough. That's for sure. So.
As soon as you mentioned that, Scott, my stomach I mean, I started to get sick, to be honest with you, because I can't imagine what it would be like going through what you're going to experience now, starting with this special race coming up. But I did want to ask you, there are special rules for this race too that I think are very interesting, that you're not allowed to do this and that. Can you explain them for our average viewer who says, well, I can't believe they have to go through this. So tell us the rules.
So the rules for this race and for the Vendée Globe Around the World race is that they're non-stop. You can't stop anywhere. You can't get any outside assistance. You have to take everything that you need for the whole passage of the whole race on board at the start. You can't receive anything part of the way. Those are the big ones. And solo, you're on your own. People often ask, what do we do at night? Do you anchor? Do you pull into port? Well, no, you don't. You can't. You keep going. These boats have an autopilot system on them, which will keep the boat running in a certain direction on its own. And so you have to turn that on and rely on that to drive the boat. We set up a bunch of alarms for, if you see something in the radar or if there's another boat coming near, we get alarms. But these boats don't stop. You're going, you're probably going, you're going 110% during the day, or when you're not sleeping, you're going 90% when you are. And we end up getting in these series of cat naps where, you sleep for 30 minutes and then you wake up for 5 and check things, sleep for 30. You might wake up for an hour and do something, sleep for 30, wake up for 5 and check things. And so day becomes night, night becomes day. I honestly lose track of days, and it just all becomes one goal to get to the end. But those are the rules.
Yeah, and there's good luck with that. I do not want to be in your boat, whether you're manning the controls or not, because I would slow you down and I would get sick right away. But I think also before we let you go, let's say this. Let's say technology breaks down and no one knows where you're at, but the race is still going, and you finish. But nobody knows that you finished. Who was the first person that would get the call that you would say, I made it, I did it? Who gets that call?
Well, my wife gets that call. If nobody knows where I am, the first time I'm able to make a call to somebody, it's my wife. That is for sure. These boats have a lot of safety systems. We have a tracker that sends our position every 10 minutes, always. We have other ones that we can set off if that one's not working. And I give updates to the shore and to my wife probably every 5 or 6 hours. So there's a lot of communication. But yeah, if things went dead, if I arrived somewhere, she'd be the first person I'd call.
All right, so with that in mind, do you have like any special deals with your wife? You let me do this, and when I get back, we're going here. What's the deal with your wife to allow you to be solo for so long?
Well, Doug, she's in hearing distance of this call, so now I'm going to have to come up with something, I guess, because
Oh, I'm sorry.
there was nothing in place. But thanks.
She's obviously very understanding and knows what your passions are all about. And now our listeners and viewers know what the passions of Scott Scheuer are all about. And congratulations on your journey from being, this successful businessman and now being able to transition into a professional sailor. I give you a lot of credit, and we're all going to be watching you and rooting you on. As I mentioned, continued success. And thanks for spending a few moments here on Sports Jam.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Doug. It's really nice to be here with you as well. And if I can say one last thing, we have a sail on the front of the boat at times we fly. It says "Choose Your Adventure," and that's really what this is about, is trying to encourage people to sign up for something that scares them a little bit, gives them a bounce in the step, a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
Just for me, it won't be on the water, Scott.
Appreciate
Thanks again.
that. All right, thanks, Doug.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Special thanks this week going out to Marlon LeWinter for hooking us up with Scott Scheuer. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.